Someday a date will happen. It could very well be June 12th. Someday a date will absolutely happen. It could very well be June 12th. We'll see. We'll know next week.
President Donald Trump verbally taking a wait-and-see attitude on a summit with Kim Jong-un. It's Thursday, May 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. We'd like you to join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, we explore a relatively quiet reaction to China's move to send arms to disputed islands in the South China Sea. A U.S. employee in a Chinese city suffers an injury from what is being portrayed as a Cuba-like sonic attack. All on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says the United States will know by next week whether his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will be held on June 12th in Singapore as scheduled. It could be very well June 12th, Trump said Wednesday. If we go, it'll be a great thing for North Korea. North Korea has indicated it might call off the meeting due to disagreements on conditions by the United States for unilateral denuclearization, but plans are moving ahead for the meeting anyway. Trump met with South Korean President Moon Jae-in Tuesday, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports.
President Trump's White House meeting with his South Korean counterpart came as next month's summit with Kim Jong-un remains in question.
There are certain conditions that we want, and I think we'll get those conditions. And if we don't, we don't have the meeting. If it doesn't happen, maybe it'll happen later. Maybe it'll happen at a different time.
North Korea began to cast doubt on the meeting after the U.S. and South Korea started military exercises. And National Security Advisor John Bolton suggested the Libya model of denuclearization. That is a reference to Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, who gave up his nuclear weapons in 2003. 8 years later, he was deposed, drug out of a ditch, and shot in the head during a U.S.-backed uprising. Trump on Tuesday insisted Kim has nothing to worry about if he gives up his nuclear weapons.
Yes, we will guarantee his safety, and we've talked about that from the beginning. He will be safe. He will be happy. His country will be rich. His country will be hardworking and very prosperous.
But North Korea, meanwhile, has continued lashing out at U.S.-South Korean exercises, even as it prepares to destroy this nuclear test site on its east coast sometime later this week. The mixed signals, a result of decades of animosity that won't easily be overcome, say experts.
There's so much distrust on both sides that the idea of what used to be called action for action, that if they do something, and we gradually build trust. I think that's probably what the pitch is going to be from President Moon to President Trump.
Whether it works out is anyone's guess. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. 8 South Korean journalists arrived in North Korea Wednesday after receiving a last-minute approval by the reclusive regime to observe the dismantling of the North Korea's nuclear test site. The latest search for the missing Malaysian Airlines flight MH370 will end next week, keeping alive one of the world's biggest aviation mysteries. Australian Archbishop Philip Wilson is stepping away from his post after becoming the world's highest-ranking Catholic cleric to be convicted of covering up child sexual abuse committed by a fellow priest. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. Beijing has weathered only slight protest and light protest against its reported missile installations in the Spratly Islands, making it easier to strengthen its military outpost in the disputed South China Sea. That, according to analysts, Vietnam demanded on May 8th that China remove any missiles, but push no further. A presidential spokesman in the Philippines said it has active mechanisms to discuss militarization of the South China Sea, but does not see Beijing as a threat. Both countries, along with Brunei, Malaysia, and Taiwan, claim waters where China reportedly deployed anti-ship and surface-to-air missiles in April. More from VOA's Martin Seacrest.
Vietnam demanded May 8 that China remove any missiles but did not push further. And according to a presidential office spokesman, the Philippines has active mechanisms to discuss militarization of the South China Sea but does not see Beijing as a threat. Both countries, along with Brunei, Malaysia, and Taiwan, claim waters where China reportedly deployed anti-ship and surface-to-air missiles in April. The lack of further protest gives China a clear channel to keep any missiles in place on the three Spratly Islets where it has built installations over the past 2 years and added more weapon systems. China said last week it was testing bombers. Sean King, vice president of the Park Strategies Political Consultancy in New York, says it may be too late to raise objections.
The fizzling of regional protests against Beijing's installation of missiles in the South China Sea means Beijing's hegemony over said vast body of water is now a virtual fait accompli. There's not much left that anyone can do about it.
Beijing claims about 90% of the South China Sea overlapping waters that the five other governments say belongs to them. China has irked the others since 2010 by landfilling tiny islets, in some cases for military installations. Colin Koh is a maritime security research fellow at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. He sees China continuing its actions regardless of the reaction from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations unless it crosses the threshold of hostility.
I think China is more than willing to keep doing what it's doing. I mean, including those build-ups.
Analysts say China may be building up weapons to deter the United States and its powerful allies outside Southeast Asia from challenging its claim. Martin Seacrest, VOA News.
The United States has disinvited China from a major international maritime exercise, saying Beijing's destabilizing behavior in the South China Sea is inconsistent with the principles of the U.S.-led drill. A statement from the Pentagon read China's continued militarization of disputed features in the South China Sea only served to raise tensions and destabilize the region. The statement said that disinviting China from the 2018 RIMPAC is an initial response to Beijing's South China Sea activities. It did not specify what other steps may be taken. Since 2014, China has taken part in RIMPAC, the world's largest international maritime drill, which is held every 2 years in Hawaii. Happening now in Asia, thousands of people in Karachi attend the funeral Wednesday for a 17-year-old Pakistani exchange student who was killed in a mass shooting at a Texas high school. Tensions soar Wednesday along the volatile frontier between India and Pakistan in the disputed Himalayan region of Kashmir, as rival soldiers shelled dozens of villages and border posts for a sixth straight day. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Bloomberg News, citing people familiar with the matter, reports that China's telecom ZTE, slapped with a 7-year ban on buying U.S. components for its products, has lost more than $3 billion after halting major operations. The ban was imposed after U.S. authorities in April determined the company lied about the sale of products with U.S. parts to Iran and North Korea. Tuesday, President Donald Trump was asked how he envisions resolving the ZTE matter now that the Chinese government has intervened and asked him to revisit the ban.
They can pay a big price without necessarily damaging all of these American companies, which they are, because, you know, you're talking about tremendous amounts of money and jobs to American companies. So I envision a very large fine. I envision perhaps new management, new board of directors, very tight security rules. But we caught them doing bad things. We caught them, not anybody else. We caught them doing bad things. And we essentially made it so difficult that it was shut down. By shutting them down, we're hurting a lot of American companies, really good American companies. So what I envision is a very large fine of more than $1 billion, could be $1.3 billion. I envision a new management, a new board, and very, very strict security rules. And I also envision that they will have to buy a big percentage of their parts and equipment from American companies.
Gary Huffbauer, a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, told VOA's Victor Beatty that ZTE's global success made its current plight important to Beijing, and U.S. sanctions can have an adverse impact on individual companies, as has been proven in penalties levied on Russian firms.
That doesn't mean it changes the policy of the government, but it can really hammer individual companies. And ZTE is quite vulnerable for two reasons. One, it gets most of its critical components from U.S. companies like Qualcomm, and it sells a lot to U.S. firms. So on both sides, it's vulnerable. So Trump put up these alternative ideas of penalties as opposed to denying U.S. companies the ability to sell or buy transactions with ZTE. These alternative penalties are much, much more modest and will not hammer ZTE. I see some senators think that that isn't stiff enough, and they're complaining.
So you're talking about the options that he laid out today, a management shakeup or a large fine,
yes.
Is not a big deal.
You know, it's painful, but it's not a big deal for a company of ZTE's size and flexibility and, you know, their ability. They can find other managers, you know, not easy, but they will find them. And $1.5 billion will, you know, that's a lot of money to you and me, but it's not critical to ZTE.
Well, ZTE, of course, has effectively been shut down for a period of up to 7 years. Will it reopen then under such guidelines?
Well, if these guidelines go into effect, yes, it will reopen. That will be part of the U.S.-China broader trade talks. Now, as I mentioned, there's a lot of opposition from Congress where that will press Trump to reverse himself yet again. I don't know, but I doubt it. I think Trump has probably decided, President Trump has decided that this, you know, it's just not critical to the U.S. interest to, you know, bankrupt ZTE.
He's using it perhaps as leverage in the broader U.S.-Chinese relationship?
Yeah, he's getting something in return. And what he seems to be getting in return is a cut in auto tariffs. The Chinese auto tariff is quite high at 25%, and I've seen that they might go down to 15%. Plus, probably politically more important, is China will not put on any new tariffs on U.S. agricultural shipments, soybeans, sorghum, corn, et cetera, and in fact might buy some more of those products. So that would be the quid for the quo.
Gary Huffbauer said recent U.S.-China trade talks produced the outline of a pretty good deal that benefits both countries. It will not reduce the trade imbalance very much, but he expects that it will bring Chinese trade practices more in line with global norms. As for intellectual property theft, he said that is a longer-term issue, and a big step would be ending so-called joint ventures and allowing foreigners to own and operate businesses freely in China. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. India has launched a complaint against the United States to challenge U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum. The Thai government has chosen to allow continued use of the toxic weed killer paraquat and two other farm chemicals despite mounting concerns over health risks, especially for farmers. A mother who tricked her teenage daughter into traveling to Pakistan to marry an older man was jailed for 4.5 years Wednesday after becoming the first person in England to be convicted of forced marriage. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories, great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department issued a health alert Wednesday for its citizens in China in response to what it said was a recent report of a U.S. government employee in Guangzhou experiencing subtle and vague but abnormal sensations of sound and pressure. The U.S. Embassy in Beijing said the employee was sent back to the United States for evaluation and diagnosed with a mild traumatic brain injury. Wednesday's alert said the U.S. government does not know the cause of the reported symptoms and has not received similar reports in other parts of China, but that it is taking the report seriously. It advised anyone who experiences unusual acute auditory or sensory phenomena accompanied by unusual sounds or piercing noises to not seek out the source, but instead to move to a location where they're not present. During a joint appearance with the Chinese state counselor and Foreign Minister Yang Wei, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the State Department is working to determine the cause and impact of the incident.
We're concerned about it. It's a serious medical incident. We want to make sure and take care of every one of our officers serving overseas. We've learned about it only recently. We are still trying to identify all the circumstances surrounding it. We've notified China of what took place as best we know it, and they have responded in a way that is exactly the right response. They've honored their commitment under the Vienna Convention to take care of the diplomats that are serving in their country, and we truly appreciate this. They've offered to assist us in investigating how this came to be, and State Councilor Wong and I had a moment to talk about how we can endeavor to figure out what happened here. To ensure that something like this doesn't happen again in their country. And so we're working together to resolve it. I look forward to it. I hope we can figure it out. It's very important that each and every one of our officers, wherever they're serving in the world, is protected and taken care of.
State Department spokesperson Heather Neuert said the State Department will be sending a medical team to Guangzhou early next week to conduct baseline medical evaluations of all consulate Guangzhou employees who request it. Last year in Cuba, the United States reported that some of its personnel and family members experienced a range of symptoms, often after hearing an unusual sound, but the cause is still unknown. Now this news alert from VOA Asia. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the planned summit between U.S. and North Korean leaders is still set for June 12th and stressed that Washington is prepared to walk away from the negotiations if the right deal is not on the table. A U.N. Security Council committee Wednesday approved the travel of North Korean officials to Singapore for a June 12th summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim and planning meetings. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. It's been a while since we mentioned the Zika virus around the time of the Rio Olympics and its potential spread to global visitors and athletes by mosquito bites. Now researchers at New York University College of Dentistry are taking a new approach to quickly identifying Zika and other infections. As VOA's Faith Lapidus reports, unlike currently available tests, the approach does not involve drawing blood.
Dan Malamud has spent most of his career working on HIV. Recognizing that every molecule in the blood is also in the mouth, he and his team developed a less invasive protocol to test for the virus.
One of the unique things is that we try as much as possible to use saliva rather than blood, because people find they don't mind spitting in a tube, but they don't want a needle up their arm.
The two-part diagnostic protocol tests for the nucleic acid of the virus and then looks for antibodies such as immunoglobulins. Because antibodies produced right after infection are different than ones produced later, Malamud says that gives a timeline for the infection.
IgM antibodies come up quite fast, and IgG antibodies come up later. So if we have a sample with nucleic acid and IgM, we know the individual was recently infected. If we have a sample, there's no nucleic acid, there's no IgM, but there's IgG, we know that they were infected a long time ago. And that's important for epidemiologists to follow how an infectious disease is traveling.
When the Zika outbreak began, Malamud thought the HIV protocol could be adapted, since both are RNA viruses. With Zika samples from Brazil, his team was able to identify the virus's nucleic acid, as well as Zika-specific antigens for detecting antibodies to it. Maita Sabalfa, a postdoctoral associate testing the Zika samples, says those Zika-specific antigens are key to a correct diagnosis.
Because the Zika virus infection is asymptomatic. Only 1 in 5 present symptoms, and the symptoms are similar to other viral infections. So it's very difficult, based on the clinical symptoms, to diagnose for Zika. And this is why the molecular assay and detecting the RNA and detecting the antibodies is very important.
And because this test combines both nucleic acid and antibody assays, it can be completed in 1 hour or less, compared to the current procedure, which detects them separately and can take up to 4 weeks. The rapid Zika test is continuing to be validated, but the NYU team suggests its method could be applied to other infectious diseases, such as yellow fever, chikungunya, West Nile virus, and even dengue. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Award-winning American writer Philip Roth has died at the age of 85. His agent said Roth died late Tuesday in New York from congestive heart failure. In a career that spanned more than 50 years, Roth wrote more than 30 books, many of them exploring the Jewish-American experience. His first published book was a 1959 collection of short stories called Goodbye Columbus that earned him the National Book Award. Roth's best-known work came a decade later in the form of the novel Portnoy's Complaint, a satirical look at a young, middle-class New Yorker with a possessive mother and an obsession with sexuality. In 1998, he won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction for his novel American Pastoral. Other honors include the Man Booker International Prize, the Penn Faulkner Award, and the National Medal of Arts. The Pacific Rim is known for the Ring of Fire because volcanic activity, which occurs throughout much of Asia along the Pacific Ocean. That ring includes the U.S. state of Hawaii, where lava sputtering from Hawaii's Kilauea volcano has inflicted serious injury to a resident of the Big Island and is posing new threats as it flows toward the Pacific Ocean. An unnamed man was reportedly hit by a lava spatter as he sat on the balcony of his property in the town of Pahoa Saturday. Officials also fear that lava streams from the latest eruptions could block major evacuation routes, and it is threatening a large geothermal power plant. VOA's Laritza Hook has more.
Fountains of bright orange lava were seen shooting more than 5 meters into the air on Saturday, creating rivers of molten rock that destroyed several homes and are threatening to block a major highway. Scorching lava also had its first serious casualty. The eruptions, which started in early May, seem to be getting worse. Officials say the volcano could spew molten rock the size of a refrigerator and that even small pieces can be deadly. Residents of the Leilani Estate community closest to the volcano have been the first to evacuate.
We might be able to go back in a week, a month, but the threat will be there for... threat's always there, but it's going to be more severe of a threat now.
Officials ordered more people to evacuate on Saturday when lava crossed the highway and flowed into the ocean, creating new health hazards.
It seems to be flowing pretty fast down to Highway 137 to the ocean. It was at one point directed towards us, and we evacuated. Actually, we evacuated twice in the last 2 weeks. And then when it took a slight turn, we decided to come back home, and here we are. So, hoping for the best.
Geologists now fear that fresh magma could emerge as far as 40 kilometers away from the volcano's summit. Ashes and toxic gas from the volcano have spread even farther. Health officials say even those living farther away from the volcano could be affected.
Especially those people who may already have breathing issues need to be taking cover or leaving areas where there's any indication of issues. Staying inside is also good, and in areas of ashfall.
Experts say they cannot predict when the volcanic activity will die down. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. And we'd love to hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our team, Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.